tonight, we can say we fought to keep Oregon a welcoming and inclusive place for all.
We can love and care about people who are different than us. We can embrace difference while seeking common ground.
She spoke out then.
I believe.
She's speaking now.
I believe.
I still believe.
I believe.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Caribbean Justice Court quashes Guyana's anti-trans law, rainbow candidates surf the U.S. blue wave, and melody and policy ignite Emma's revolution. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Anique Lukens.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending November 17th, 2018. The Caribbean Court of Justice has overturned a law in Guyana that targeted transgender people. The ruling this week declared as unconstitutional the small South American nation's law criminalizing men and women for dressing in clothing of the opposite sex for an improper purpose. The court has jurisdiction over several Caribbean and South American countries. Noting that Guyana's constitution protects its people from discrimination and states that no one is to be treated in a discriminatory manner by any public office or authority, justices struck down that part of the colonial-era British Penal Code that dates back to 1893. The ruling called the law vague, that was from a different time and no longer served any legitimate purpose. The plaintiffs in the case were four transgender women who were arrested in 2009 for cross-dressing in public. The appeal to the Caribbean Court of Justice challenged their conviction by a magistrate who fined them the equivalent of about $100 and ordered them to go to church and give their lives to Jesus Christ. Private consensual adult same-gender sex is against the law and carries a sentence of up to life in prison in Guyana. It's the only country in South America to maintain that part of its antiquated penal code. The first ever LGBTQ pride parade was held in June in Georgetown, the country's capital. The favorable ruling has now sparked equality activists to call on lawmakers in Guyana to repeal all the nation's anti-queer laws.
The Constitutional Chamber of Costa Rica's Supreme Court of Justice struck down the Central American nation's denial of civil marriage to same-gender couples in August, but delayed its ruling from coming into force until after it was officially published. The ruling was a direct result of the decision in January of this year by the Inter-American Court of Human Rights ordering all signatories to the American Convention on Human Rights to open civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples. Rulings by the Inter-American Court are binding on 20 nations in the region. A few have already enacted marriage equality, but most have not. Although President Carlos Alvarado submitted a marriage equality proposal to Costa Rica's Legislative Assembly, its leadership has refused to take up the issue. The country's high court decision was finally published on November 14th. It now gives lawmakers up to 18 months to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. If there's no action by May 2020, the court ruled, same-gender couples will automatically be allowed to start planning their weddings. In their 287-page ruling, justices said that acts of open discrimination, whether they are expressed or implied, cannot be justified in any way in a democratic society that respects fundamental rights. Enrique Sanchez, the country's first openly gay legislator, accuses the Legislative Assembly's leadership of intentionally delaying debate. According to Pink News, evangelical anti-LGBTQ members hold 14 of the chamber's 57 seats.
Tanzania is paying a heavy price for its oppressive treatment of sexual minorities and pregnant schoolgirls. The East African nation's second biggest donor, Denmark, announced that it was withholding the equivalent of about $10 million in aid soon after Dar es Salaam Governor Paul Makonda ordered the arrest of anyone in the region perceived to be homosexual. Tanzania's foreign ministry tried to distance itself from the crackdown, but queer panic quickly spread across the country. The U.S. issued a warning to Americans in the country to be careful what they post on social media, and the European Union withdrew its ambassador. While acknowledging that the loss of financial aid will affect LGBTQ Tanzanians too, Judy Kato, a lawyer with the advocacy group Equality Now, told Reuters that the government has not been receptive to any type of dialogue over the issue of sexual minorities. And now the World Bank has frozen a $300 million education loan to Tanzania over a long-standing policy that bans pregnant girls, the government calls immoral, from attending school, among other human rights concerns. While a law punishing gay sex is rarely enforced in Tanzania, its mere existence fosters anti-queer bias and violence. Pro-equality groups have been shut down, and activists have been arrested. Government authorities have also stopped HIV/AIDS prevention programs for gay men.
Pioneering U.S. activist Harry Hay used to say that queer people are society's trailblazers. A group of about 80 LGBTQ people fleeing persecution is the first from what Donald Trump and his allies have called an invasion to reach the Mexico-U.S. border. They include a baby, two toddlers, and a 12-year-old. They broke away from the migrant caravan that's been traveling through Central America and into Mexico the past few weeks after encountering anti-queer harassment from their fellow asylum seekers. They arrived in the border town of Tijuana this week after gaining support from LGBTQ rights groups to supplement the money they were able to put together for buses to carry them along the last stretch of their journey. The Washington Post reported that they celebrated their arrival by waving rainbow flags and blasting music by Ariana Grande. The queer refugees had enough money between them to rent modest local accommodations in Tijuana while contemplating their next moves. One government official said that the wait for the chance to apply for asylum at nearby San Diego's San Ysidro port of entry is up to 18 months. Sadly, they're already facing anti-queer animus from Tijuana's mayor and some of their neighbors. Cesar Mejia, a 23-year-old Honduran man, told the Spanish news agency EFE that he had to flee his homeland because he had been repeatedly beaten by gang members for being gay. In addition to Honduras, most of the other LGBTQ asylum seekers have fled persecution, poverty, and violence based on their sexual orientation or gender identity in Guatemala, El Salvador, and Nicaragua.
And finally, as we record this newscast amidst the whirlwind that is the Trump administration, a twice-failed Republican candidate in Iowa, who's targeted in an FBI fraud investigation, is still the acting Attorney General of the United States. The president replaced one dyed-in-the-wool homophobe, Jeff Sessions, with another, a former U.S. attorney for Iowa named Matthew Whitaker, the day after the rainbow-hued, blue-wave midterm election swept Democrats into the House majority. As U.S. attorney in 2007, Whitaker brought a politically motivated federal prosecution against Matt McCoy, a rising star in the Democratic Party and Iowa's first openly gay state senator. The case eventually fell apart amid allegations of prosecutorial misconduct, and McCoy was acquitted of extorting a former business partner. But his life in elective politics was over. Judicial appointments and cabinet-level appointments, like attorney general, require Senate confirmation. Here's Whitaker during a 2014 conservative forum as candidate for his state's Republican U.S. Senate nomination, describing what he'd look for in a federal judge.
What I'd like to see is I'd like to see things like their worldview, what informs them, how have they lived their lives, are they people of faith, do they have a biblical view of justice, and if they have a secular worldview where this is all we have here on earth, then I'm going to be very concerned about how they judge.
Are you wondering why the president didn't replace the forced-to-resign Jeff Sessions with a logical next-in-command? Deputy Attorney General Ron Rosenstein, who's overseeing the Mueller investigation? Matthew Whitaker, Jeff Sessions' former chief of staff, has echoed Donald Trump's description of the probe as an unlawful witch hunt.
Whitaker served on the board and often did legal work for a Miami-based company called World Patent Marketing. Time travel, hot tubs, and a toilet for well-endowed men were among its claims to fame. The company allegedly targeted veterans, among other vulnerable people, claiming to help them patent their inventions, which the company failed to do. Whitaker and his associates are under federal investigation for fraud. But he went home to Iowa this week for his first public appearance since Trump named him acting attorney general and displayed amazing chutzpah when he told his audience of legal professionals,
"We're going to keep putting fraudsters in jail. All of us can be on the lookout for fraud schemes and report suspected criminal activity."
A number of lawsuits have already been filed challenging Trump's ability to appoint the legal shill as acting attorney general, whom one legal scholar described as having the least qualifying credentials to be a U.S. attorney, let alone attorney general. The soon-to-be Democratic House majority, which officially doesn't take power until early January, is already planning to haul Whitaker before a number of congressional committees to respond to numerous charges that he's unqualified, a stooge for Donald Trump, and, as the Constitution requires, he's never been vetted in or confirmed by the Senate to hold the post of Attorney General. This is all assuming, of course, that Whitaker is still the acting Attorney General of the United States next week, next month, or next year.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending November 17th, 2018. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at the always updating thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Anique Lukens.
Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom.
No peace without justice or music. Steve Sims focuses on a revolution in song later in the program.
Be true to you. Be proud. Be strong. 'Cause love's never wrong.
Hi, this is Barbara Streisand. Tuesday is a critical election for LGBTQ people and all marginalized communities. And I'm working with GLAAD to help ensure the largest turnout ever of LGBTQ and ally voters in a midterm election. I hope you will join me at the polls to send a strong message that America is better when we stand together.
Election day in the U.S. has turned into election month as delayed results, recounts, and runoffs continue, still trying to determine the winners of the remaining too-close-to-call midterm contests. The number of tight races is one proof that the passionate get-out-the-vote campaigns featuring stars like Barbara Streisand really worked. Record-breaking turnout fulfilled the Democratic Party's dream of a blue wave across the country, and LGBTQ voters, over 80% of them, help sweep Democratic candidates into office. A record number of LGBTQ candidates rode the blue wave to victory. We heard from several of them last week. Add to them the reelected bisexual Oregon Governor Kate Brown.
This election shows that when our values are on the ballot, Oregonians will come together and fight like hell to stand up for what we believe in. Tonight, we can say we fought to keep Oregon a welcoming and inclusive place for all. We fought to make sure that every woman in this state, regardless of their income, regardless of their zip code, and regardless of their immigration status, will have access to the full complement of reproductive health services. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Several queer candidates achieved notable firsts, Jennifer Webb is the first out lesbian elected to the Florida legislature. Josh Tenorio becomes Guam's lieutenant governor, the U.S. territory's first out gay executive. Tenorio ran with Lou Leon Guerrero, who becomes the island's first woman governor. 27-year-old Malcolm Kenyatta was elected Pennsylvania's second openly gay member of the state house. He's also the first black gay man elected to statewide office and joins re-elected gay incumbent Brian Sims. Megan Hunt is the first openly LGBTQ person ever elected to the Nebraska state legislature. Former Marine Neil Rafferty beat his Republican opponent by almost 9-1 to be the first openly gay man elected to the Alabama state legislature.
I'm running for this seat because I will never forget how it feels to be excluded and how hard we had to work to get a seat at the table. I'm running for this seat to fight for your family the same way that I fought for mine.
Do you remember the viral video of the 19-year-old who argued for his lesbian mom's right to marry before the Iowa legislature? Zach Walls is now going back there as a newly elected Democratic state senator who beat his libertarian opponent by more than 50 points. Walls was among hundreds of young candidates motivated to run for public office in the wake of the 2016 presidential election. An all-blue delegation will even be going to the U.S. House from California's infamous Orange County, the deep red home of many anti-queer, anti-minority politicians and ballot initiatives. In the usually conservative northern part of Los Angeles County, blue bisexual Katie Hill unseated entrenched far-right GOP congressional homophobe Steve Knight. Another one of those long, narrow vote counts has finally resulted in Arizona declaring Kristen Sinema its new U.S. senator, the first out bisexual in the U.S. Senate.
Arizona rejected what has become far too common in our country: name-calling, petty personal attacks, and doing and saying whatever it takes just to get elected. It's dangerous, and it lessens who we are as a country. But we can work with people who are different than us. We can be friends with people who are different than us. We can love and care about people who are different than us. We can keep people who are different than us safe. We can be good people who care deeply about each other, even when we disagree. We can try to understand another person's life experiences and perspective. We can try to imagine what another person's life might be like, that perhaps her experiences have shaped her life, just like our experiences have shaped ours. We can embrace difference while seeking common ground. Pledge.
More than 150 LGBTQ Victory Fund candidates won office from sea to shining sea, more than in any previous election, and the firsts keep rolling in. Gabriel Acevedo, the first gay Afro-Latino in the Maryland General Assembly. Sonia Yaquez Lewis, the first queer Latina in the Colorado State Legislature. Brandon Woodard and Susan Ruiz, the first out members of the Kansas House of Representatives. California State Insurance Commissioner-elect Ricardo Lara and North Carolina Appeals Court Judge-elect John Arrowwood, the first out gay men to win statewide election in their states. And Florida has its first all-LGBTQ city commission, thanks to the voters of Wilton Manors. Some Republican losses were equally telling. Ron Simmons was routed in his re-election bid after sponsoring an anti-trans bathroom bill in the Texas legislature. Gays for Trump leader Peter Boykin was also trounced in his bid for a seat in the North Carolina legislature. Even more telling than her re-election defeat is what Kim Davis intends to do next. The Rowan County, Kentucky clerk, who gained fame by denying gay and lesbian couples marriage licenses, plans to become an evangelical minister.
It's a little bit sad.
All in all, one of our favorite U.S. midterm winners is Kansas Congressperson-elect Charisse Davids. She's one of HBO's real-time comedian Bill Maher's favorites, too.
Two Native Americans. Deb Hyland from New Mexico, and my favorite, Kansas. Kansas. Charisse Davids, a lesbian mixed martial arts fighter. Let's see Trump call her Pocahontas.
straight military personnel will have to shower with homosexual...
What do you think goes wrong when people shower with homosexuals? Do you think it's the spray makes it catching? I mean, we don't get ourselves dry cleaned.
Hello, I'm Barney Frank, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
A few U.S. midterm election results are still coming in at a trickle, but the flood of activism is still rising, which means that the work of a lesbian political music duo powerhouse is far from over. This Way Out Music Focus host Steve Sims casts his vote for Emma's Revolution.
Music is a way for individuals to express personal, as well as political subjects, and songs by the duo Emma's Revolution are well known for just that reason.
At Emma's danger, at Emma's warning, at Emma's...
That's the song If I Had a Hammer, written by Pete Seeger and Lee Hayes in 1949 in support of the progressive movement. It was a number 10 hit for Peter, Paul, and Mary in 1962, and went on to number 3 a year later when recorded by Trini Lopez. Here it is being performed by Emma's Revolution, the award-winning activist duo of Pat Humphreys and Sandy O, whose songs have been sung for the Dalai Lama, praised by Pete Seeger, and covered by Holly Near. This is Pat Humphreys' song Swimming to the Other Side. Author Eileen E. Freeman calls it one of the 10 most awesome and most singable songs ever written. She says don't listen to it unless you're prepared to rethink how you live, love, and laugh. It is also the song that helped connect the Emma's Revolution duo.
I believe if I lived my life again, I'd still be.
This is Emma's Revolution, singing hymn song off the Grammy-nominated album Singing Through the Hard Times, a tribute to Utah Phillips. Their music has been featured on NPR's All Things Considered and Pacifica's Democracy Now!
You know, I think if death really held a knife, we'd all be beggars of love.
This song is Sing, People Sing. It's a song written in tribute to their friend and mentor, Pete Seeger, and it features Pat on banjo and Gary Johnson on accordion. Pat was with the Seeger family and a small group of friends when Pete passed. The duo wrote Sing, People Sing in the days following. It was moving listening to Pat talk about that time.
When I got there, people came from everywhere. Climbed a redwood by the stage. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom. Peace, salam, shalom.
This song is Peace, Salam, Shalom, written following September 11th, 2001, and sang at an impromptu peace march in D.C. that week. Of the song, the duo says, when the only response from the government and corporate media was war and retribution, we wrote Peace, Salam, Shalom. Another song, written following 9/11, was about undocumented workers killed in the World Trade Center. This is If I Give Your Name.
Sleepless nights, missing you silently, if I give your name.
Emma's Revolution's latest song is I Believe Her. A week before the Brett Kavanaugh, Dr. Ford hearing, Sandy Oh says, Pat and I got an email asking us to sing at an upcoming demonstration in San Francisco in support of Dr. Ford. I got the idea for the song that morning, and we finished I Believe Her by the end of breakfast. We recorded it the next night, shot the video 2 days later, and released it the day of the hearing. We and so many others have experienced some level of sexual abuse and/or harassment. It's a very personal as well as a political subject for us, explains O. And Humphreys adds, we needed a way to combat our own feelings of rage and helplessness at the prospect of Brett Kavanaugh being confirmed to a lifetime appointment on the Supreme Court.
We did not forget, I believe her. She spoke out then,
I believe.
She's speaking now,
I believe.
I still believe,
I believe.
Humphreys praised their collaborators, a group of East Bay women, artists, and sound engineers on both coasts. Humphreys says everybody set aside their other projects to create this recording and video as quickly as possible, so we could give voice to the millions who say, I believe her. Among the collaborators was Vicki Randall of the Mavis Staples Band, and formerly of the Tonight Show Band, who adds cajon and a soaring vocal solo. As well as Irene Young, renowned music photographer and videographer, who filmed, edited, and directed the video. You can learn more about Emma's Revolution at emmasrevolution.com. For This Way Out, I'm Steve Sims.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Wenzel Jones and Monique Lukens, produced with Brian DeShazer, and from Steve Sims. Barbara Streisand, Taylor Mack, and Emma's Revolution performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the Estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors who make this program possible. Be sure to visit thiswayout.org before you make your Giving Tuesday commitments on November 27th. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media and wherever you get your podcasts. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 7RGY Jeeveston, Tasmania, KWTF.net Bodega Bay, California, WESU Middletown, Connecticut, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.